First of all, I would like to say thank you to Sabine Fraser and to Mark Prelitz for taking part, for being occasional contributors to our South Slavic programs, and to being so kind to talk to our journalists in Belgrade, in Sarajevo, in many other bureaus. So, and I have three questions. As long as we mention Dodik and Serb Republic, I was just wondering, and this is a question for Mr. Prelitz, is it possible that Dodik's strategy is the way how he behaves and how he is rejecting any common institutions and whatever reminds him of Bosnia and Herzegovina as United States? And is he actually, by being really very, very rude and doing whatever to in direction of disintegration, does he want to create a situation where Muslims and Croats would reject to have a common state with Serbs, as long as he knows that he cannot get a little Serbian state within the Bosnia and Herzegovina? So I want to ask if his rudeness is a kind of strategy to achieve strategic goal, because then it would create a kind of new reality, and new reality would be we have now Muslims and Croats who don't want to live with Serbs, and what shall we do now? So is it his way to try to change common European belief that Bosnia has to stay within its own borders? My other question is for Sabine Fraser. I wonder, situation which we have now, we have Bosnia sitting and waiting for European Union to come up with solution and to suggest what kind of state they should make, what kind of constitution, and so on and so on. Then we have European Union waiting for Bosnians to grow up and to like pull themselves together and to come up with some reasonable constitutional changes. So, and actually, having in mind our discussion whether Bosnia is going forward or going backward, I would agree with you that in first 10 years after the war, Bosnia did make progress, but in last 3 years, we are not seeing any progress. My question is, if European Union has really any concept of how Bosnia would look like in 3 years, in 5 years, or whatever, and what can be done there to help Bosnians to come up with a reasonable constitution and to come up with some post-Dayton arrangement? Because obviously Dayton, which did save Bosnia and did manage to stop the war, became an obstacle for development, and it should be replaced with some post-Dayton arrangement. And are you seeing in the near future any stronger role played by the U.S.?
Thank you, Gordon.
Yeah, thank you for the question. It's a very good question. Dodik does more than provoke. I think some of the offensive things that he says are meant to do exactly what you suggest, namely irritate and anger his counterparts, especially among the Bosniaks, and provoke them into doing things that would in some way serve his interests. But this comes and goes. You know, for a long time he didn't have a Bosnian flag in his office. He has one now. So this is sort of, you know, parceled out according to what he thinks the audience will bear. It's also true that more broadly, the policies that Dodik implements head in two directions. Okay, they are building up the kinds of institutions within RS that would be necessary and helpful if it were at some point to become independent. And by taking a very hard line with his counterparts, he also slows down the process of negotiation and reform, and is trying to contribute to the perception that Bosnia is a failed project. On the other hand, all these same policies can also go in a different direction. They can also go in the direction of working up a Bosnia that is, you know, sufficiently functional for all of its people, but and yet sufficiently weak to allow the Serbs to feel safe in RS. And it's important not to to discount Bosnian Serb interest in Bosnian constitutional reform and legal reform. Some of their ideas, I think, are unworkable and unacceptable to the others and to the international community. But some of them probably deserve some attention. And there are signs that they are getting that attention from their counterparts. So it is very much a kind of two-track set of policies that he's pursuing, trying to keep all his options alive. But I think in the long run, he will realize that the independence idea is just not going to happen. It's impossible. And then he will have the other option. The other thing that's important to note, though, with Dodik is that much of this rhetoric from him is driven by his legal jeopardy, is driven by the corruption and fraud investigation against him and others. This is clearly something that is a major factor in his thinking, and it may become more significant later this year.
Thank you, Gordana, for your question also on the European Union. I think that it's clear that Bosnia-Herzegovina candidacy is going to be a big challenge also for Brussels. This is very much a unique case of such a divided country. And the European Union doesn't always have set recipes, as we saw, for example, in police reform in Bosnia-Herzegovina, when the European Union tried to impose and say, well, we have certain standards on how the police have to function. The Serbs actually were able to break down that argument pretty closely and say, well, in different EU member states, you have different types of police, some at the communal level, some at the federal level, so how can you tell us that it has to be this way? So there are limitations. The EU will not be able to come in with a blueprint and say, this is what your agricultural policy has to look like, this is what your transport policy has to look like, because this is how it's done throughout the European Union. No, there will be some flexibility, and there will need to be compromise and agreement in Bosnia about how they want these different issues to be addressed. Now, there's one thing, though, that the European Union does clearly say, is that they want to talk to one partner. They want to have one address to address in Bosnia-Herzegovina. They don't want every single chapter discussion about everything to include a representative of the central government, a representative of the federation, of the RS, of the cantons, and have a whole room of 15 different representatives talking to the representative from Brussels. That is not what they want. So here I think this is a very important tool, is that the European Union wants to talk to one voice. And this is something I'm not sure they've understood in Bosnia-Herzegovina and especially in Republika Srpska, that there's going to need to be some kind of compromise here in the idea of having one representative who can be accountable to Brussels. Now, different countries have done this in different ways. For example, in Belgium.
This is one thing you impose on them.
Yes. No, I agree. This is the one thing that is imposed, and it's very important. But if you look, for example, at the Belgium example, in Belgium, they've distributed the roles. So for certain issues, it's going to be the central government that's going to take the lead. Certain issues, it's going to be one of the entities, Flanders or Wallonia. So there's also that discussion to be held in Bosnia. It doesn't always have to be Sarajevo who's representing Bosnia-Herzegovina in the negotiations on agriculture. It might be decided that actually, no, there are people in Banja Luka who can do this better. So this is still a debate that has to happen, and it's going to be quite a substantial one. But I do believe, yeah, that this one address is a very key factor.
Thank you. I'm Elmina Kulasic. I'm with the Bosniak American Advisory Council, and I have a couple of questions. We did not mention the elections that are going to be take, taking place next year. And also, we didn't mention the voting mechanism and the problem that it creates for Bosnia in terms of the three ethnic groups and constituent people. Also, the consensus. I am not sure how that will help Bosnia move forward in terms that the demographic and the two entities have been changed and that people have not returned. If you look at Republika Srpska, the majority have not returned. You have about 90% or so Serbs living in Republika Srpska, and you have the same problem in the Federation. And as well, how do we deal with lobbying that Republika Srpska is conducting in Washington, D.C. and in Brussels, calling it something like the trade offices or something like that, and they are directly influencing the policies that Brussels and Washington, D.C. have toward Bosnia and Herzegovina. And the other question is, why not a special envoy? I mean, we all mentioned that EU is not united and that the United States should play a role in Bosnia since it had for the Dayton Peace Agreement. So why would a special envoy not be something that Bosnia needs? Thank you.
Okay, I'll take those in order. We didn't mention the elections because we just had an election, so we can't always be talking about the election, right? I think, personally, Bosnia has elections too often. I think, you know, they ought to probably have them every 4 years instead of every two. Yeah, it's really too early to talk about it'll be late in 2010. You know, who knows what will be going on then. It is true that returns are, you know, far from complete. You know, there's a sort of rich, you know, history of discussion of refugee returns in general. I think the consensus is that Bosnia is on the better end of the scale of what you normally have in post-conflict situations. You never have complete return, ever, ever, ever. Okay. You usually have less return. It would be good if there were more return, and there are some steps to seek funding now. I don't know how serious they are, but and many of these issues are economic also, you know. But anyway, the lobbying, I think, not a big problem, okay? Not illegitimate. You know, many regions have offices in many parts of the world. It is true that the RS efforts are something more than that. But, you know, why shouldn't they do that? The problem is, for the United States, that has to be kept, the audience, it's more of a problem for the audience than for the lobbyists themselves, okay? It's important that the U.S. Not allow, RS lobbying using, you know, personal relationships with people in the administration to influence American policy unduly. Because U.S. policy, I think, has been and still is, you know, quite sound. And lastly, the issue of the special envoy. The first and most important reason why this is a bad idea is that it would encourage the intransigence of which I spoke at the beginning of my presentation. You know, among the Bosniak community, but also in the Bosnian Croat community, it would lead to forum shopping, where you would have some people going to this envoy, other people going to the EU special representative. There are additional possible bad outcomes. Why not a Russian special envoy? You know, if you're concerned about Russian influence, that would be an opening that would produce, you know, that would tempt, you know, Russia to do something that I think would be wholly unhelpful for the situation. It would dilute the considerable influence and weight of the U.S. Embassy in Sarajevo. Institutionally, within the State Department, it would dilute the roles of the Assistant Secretary and the Ambassador. A number of reasons why it's just it's a bad idea.
No, I agree with Marco for change.
Okay, got a question here. Any more questions over in Prague at this point?
No.
Thank you. Hi, Douglas Davidson from the German Marshall Fund, which is, of course, an organization dedicated to American-European cooperation. I've noticed in about the 6 months that I've been here, I want to return to the question of the European Union. There's a small cottage industry. Discussions on Bosnia and Herzegovina and where it's going. To your credit, I have to say you've actually got people from the region, which is more than happens in a lot of these. And often they turn into Americans saying the European Union must do this and it must do that. At some of them, there's always a valiant representative of the EU saying, well, yes, but. And so my question is, we often call for a robust EUSR. And I understand current planning is for something like 80 people, which would include, I guess, everybody from drivers up to the EUSR, which is far larger than most. But my impression is that the European Union is really unwilling to make some of these moves that would make the office more robust, and it's also unwilling to make any sort of special arrangements for accession negotiations with Bosnia and Herzegovina. A lot of people will hear say that both are necessary, that a lot of Americans will call for executive powers for the USR, which the European Union rules out instantly. So I was wondering if you could define your version of robustness a little bit more. Secondly, if you can maybe say what role the EUSR ought to play in constitutional reform, which the, at least the Commission rules out as a condition, a precondition for anything, which somehow waters it down immediately. And thirdly, if you're, the other thing I understand is that the EU4 will probably turn into a training force of like 250 people, which wipes out any kind of coercive military threat, and whether you think that will have any bearing on future inter-ethnic relations or whatever in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Thank you.
It's a very good question. Let me take the end of it first. Yeah, I think it is very likely that the EU4 will scale down relatively quickly to a training mission. I have thought for a long time that this was the right thing, and I still think that. But just very recently I've been hearing some calls to retain a military presence in Bosnia from unexpected sources from Bosnian Serbs who think that it's still necessary. So, you know, I'm wondering whether maybe it's, it might be a bit premature. The previous high representative, Miroslav Lajcak, argued that there should be a combat force for about 6 months after the closure of OHR to cover the initial transition period. And we think that's a good idea. We also think that you can achieve some of the same effect in other means. We think NATO should explore the possibility of leasing space in Bosnia to do training. So, for example, in Western Bosnia, which is very sparsely populated, you could do, you know, mountain training for troops deploying to Afghanistan, something that Paddy Ashton has also called for. And there's been some interest within NATO. As I understand it, the major obstacle is expense. So this would be something that would bring foreign troops into Bosnia, but not in a formal peacekeeping capacity. It would still have some psychological value, some stabilizing value. They're here, you know, so can't do anything really crazy while they're here, but they wouldn't be here as policemen. Okay, so it wouldn't be demeaning in that way. The EUSR, we think that the model in Macedonia has a lot to say for it. We like the idea of double hatting, where the EUSR would also be the head of the Commission delegation. We think in some ways the Commission, which will have a larger component, I think it's about 120 or so to the 80 in the likely EUSR office, is in some ways more important and will become increasingly important as the negotiations go on. So we see some mileage there. The other robust elements of robustness Sabina's alluded to, there would be some control over EU instrument of pre-accession assistance funds. There might be some ability to ban people from traveling and a number of other things. The potency of these really should not be overstated, and I think they're understood to be relatively modest tools. They're not going to prevent anyone. Like, if Dodik has made up his mind to call a referendum, losing, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 million euro, which is presumably his portion of the EU, or even 100 million euro, is not going to dissuade him. You know, not having a visa is also not going to dissuade him. That's simply the reality. But these things are, you know, more than the typical USR has, much more. And ultimately, the most important role, I think, for the USSR is within the European Union, serving as a single point of contact for the EU and as an instrument of harmony for the EU. One of the most important things we think he could do in a crisis is to allow the EU to speak with one voice more easily than it might otherwise do, and to prevent, you know, again, to take this referendum idea, if Dodik is talking about a referendum and trying to shop this idea to European capitals, it would allow them to say, no, okay, our representative is in Sarajevo right now. You must speak with him, only him. Okay, don't be going to Spain. Don't be going to, you know, Greece. They will not see you for these kinds of discussions. It's important, you know, in a crisis to be able to have, you know, that one point of contact, you know, to keep the union's policy together. And we think the U.S., I think, will also have an important role in bucking that up and supporting that and helping the EU to retain cohesion.
And I would say that, you know, a lot of these recommendations, when we talk about them in Brussels, they do receive support. I would say the most reluctant body is the Commission, because the Commission has this kind of way of doing things and doesn't like to be kind of pushed around, and is afraid that the Council is going to take too much power through this EUSR. But yeah, most of the things that we proposed are already being discussed in Brussels. And anybody who's works on the European Union knows that everything always kind of comes down to what's going to happen with the Lisbon Treaty. But let's remember, EUSR as a mechanism is a new mechanism. It's only existed, it's existed for less than 10 years. And the Lisbon Treaty would give a much stronger role to this kind of a common institution, common foreign policy institution. So again, there is a discussion about this in Brussels, and I think there is increasing willingness to take on this kind of a stronger role.
Hi, I'm Janet Raven from Georgetown University. I wanted to ask, short of an envoy from the U.S., what would be really concrete, appropriate steps for the U.S. to show its engagement and its support of the EU, especially given that there have been a lot of discussions and op-eds saying we have to do something, something, something. So what would be an appropriate, concrete something?
I think the real need is not symbolic at this point. The U.S. presence in Bosnia is already very strong. The place where there's a need is coordinating is between Washington and Brussels and the EU member states. Okay, so the American ambassador, you know, really speaks with a lot of weight in Bosnia. He can speak easily with and does speak, you know, very often with his counterparts in Bosnia. The EU ambassadors, the High Representative, the EU Special Representative. That's fine, but you know he can't be calling the EU capitals, okay, and speaking to the foreign ministers. Okay. There should be this is something for this is a job for the State Department, right? There should be much more attention to ensuring that the EU member state capitals are paying sufficient attention, are hearing the American point of view as to what's happening, and are attentive to events on the ground. I think that's that particular link is what could still be improved.
Okay, let's take one last question here in Washington.
Stan Nakoba with the Cato Institute. Let me ask a more fundamental question to get at this. One of the things that's puzzled me since the end of the Cold War, with the end of the Cold War, has been the three disintegrations, major disintegrations in Europe. Velvet divorce, Czechoslovakia. Soviet Union breaks up, bloodier, but you know not so bad, although we're having some pushback now. Yugoslavia breaks up, total disaster, very bloody. What accounts for the difference? Why was Yugoslavia so much worse? Why, after all those post-war years, was there no solidarity for Yugoslav identity, how did these identities remain so strong? How did they lead to such violent conflict? And we're dealing with the echoes of that now. Because so much of what I'm hearing, EU, US, Special Representative, is an implicit acknowledgement they can't do it themselves. There's something enduring there that they can't do it themselves. So what is it, what accounts for that difference? Because quite frankly, I don't think the international community can sustain this intensity of effort indefinitely. You know, we have the financial crisis as well. And NATO forces are stretched also. So unless there's something indigenous, how do we transform Yugoslavia to say what was with Czechoslovakia, the Velvet Divorce?
Well, I think we're hoping there won't be a divorce. We're hoping the marriage can be saved. That's the first answer. You know, in my previous incarnation, I was a historian of Yugoslavia, so I'm interested in your question. I haven't really thought about it for a long time, but in my view, the thing that did for Yugoslavia was the Serb question. Yugoslav federalism had a situation where you had, you know, a relatively large number of Serbs living outside of their home republic, or the republic that they were associated with, Serbia. And the Serb view of Yugoslavia historically was that it was, you know, their state, a state they were willing to share with others, not purely theirs, but really in some fundamental way theirs, you know, after World War I and then after World War II. And then it turned out that this was not really the way it was seen by the others. Okay, the others saw it as, okay, your part is Serbia, right? All these Serbs outside, you know, they will now become, you know, nationals of something else. And that was the tinder that set off, you know, the conflagration in Yugoslavia. I'm not sure if I would really make much of an analogy in Bosnia. There are some, and I have to be very guarded here. There are some similarities. You know, the Bosniak community is the largest, and it does identify with the country as a whole, much more than with their entity, which is the Federation of Bosnia and Herzegovina. The Serbs, on the other hand, identify, you know, not so much with the state as a whole, much more with the entity. But there is also, you know, what you really didn't have in Yugoslavia, the recent unsuccessful war, the recent failed divorce, so to speak, when it turned out really that it wasn't possible to divide the country in a way that without, you know, even more than the 3 years of fighting that you already had. So it's no more possible today. It would be, I think, you know, relatively easy to get you know, people to sign up to the idea of breaking the country apart if they could agree on the lines. They're not even close to agreeing on the line. There was a recent proposal as part of these negotiations between Dodik, Suleiman Tihic, and Dragan Čović, the respectively Bosniak and Croat political party leaders, to modify the federation, to eliminate the cantons, and to create several sort of larger units in their place as a way of simplifying the enormously expensive administration that they have. And that created so much political uproar that it shook the positions not only of Tihic, but also of Dodik, who wasn't involved in that at all. So these kinds of, you know, land questions are still absolute dynamite in Bosnia, and nobody wants to set it off. So, and it is, in fact, not that hard for them to get along together. You know, for Serbia, for the Republika Srpska, they do not, you know, they don't really chafe so much as being part of Bosnia. The Bosnian hand on Republika Srpska is a very light hand. They don't really experience it very much. You know, the only times they really encounter it are when they go to Sarajevo to stand in line for a visa to the EU. So that's more or less fine, you know, with them. And as long as you can tinker around the edges there, maybe trade some competences to the central state, especially, you know, that would be acceptable, especially if they then trade them on to the EU. transfer them to Brussels, maybe in return for getting some back that they had lost or some other things, or some political positions that they would like to fill. There's talk, for example, of putting the putting some offices, some state offices, in Banja Luka. There's even agreements to put the Civil Aviation Authority in Banja Luka. And indeed, why not? Why shouldn't more of this, you know, be dispersed? After all, you know, Serbs pay a substantial chunk of the state budget, but the employment for that is focused disproportionately in Sarajevo, where much of it goes to Bosniaks who live there. So it would be, I think, fair, and it would, in fact, tie the country together more to disperse, you know, the central government a bit. This is one possible way in which you could have an agreement that is to the benefit of all, not a sort of zero-sum thing. I don't know if that really answers your question, but...
Nena, did you have anything to possibly add on?
Well, there are dozens of books written on that topic, so it would be a little bit too ambitious to answer in 2 minutes. But just 2 points on the question why we were faced with the breakup of Yugoslavia. A colleague of mine told me here that it was not breakup, Yugoslavia was killed. But anyway, that first point that I believe people tend to forget, Yugoslavia has never been faced with elections at the federal level. So people has never had a chance to elect leadership at the level of Yugoslavia. Second point is, you know, in other countries of Eastern Europe, there were kind of communists or communism versus people. And, of course, communists lost. In ex-Yugoslavia, it was a coalition between communists and nationalists in different federal units. They were acting against the same coalition in other units of ex-Yugoslavia. So it was based on ethnicity, one of the reasons. And before I end, I just want to say I personally have deep, deep respect toward ICG. Keep reading and learning from them. So I believe we could easily make any kind of deal about the Bosnian future and how it needs to be arranged, but unfortunately nobody would listen to us in the country.
And I will, I believe, have to let that be the last word. Thank you, Nena. Thank you, Marco. Thank you, Sabine, for sharing your time, your experience, your knowledge on this subject. And I'd like to thank everyone for coming. Thank you to our Radio Liberty. Thank you so much.